Welcome to the Church Pulse Weekly Podcast, featuring leadership author and podcaster, Carrie Newhoff, and Barna president, David Kinneman. This podcast delivers unprecedented insights every week into how church leaders are navigating constant change in an era of disruption and discusses new digital tools to help you stay connected in real time to the people in your church. And now, your hosts, Carrie Newhoff and David Kinneman.
Welcome to Church Pulse Weekly. It is so good to have you with us this week. And we are in the middle of a month where we are talking about next-gen ministry. How do you reach the next generation? It was a challenge pre-COVID. It's even more so now as we're learning. It's Carrie Newhoff here, and I'm joined by David Kinneman, president of the Barna Group. David, so I'm glad we're doing this deep dive, man. This one has been close to, like, would you say reaching the next generation is almost like a life calling for you? Is it at that level?
Yeah, I think so. It's definitely one of the things I feel like the Lord's put me on earth and part of my mission in Barna. You know, when you talk about an individual calling and then a corporate calling, you know, Barna has a particular mission to try to help people navigate change. We sort of derived that mission from 1 Chronicles 12:32, the tribe of Issachar, people who understood the times and knew what to do. And so, you know, I feel a broad base of passion for that entire remit to help people navigate change, help Christian leaders understand a changing world, including trends and technology trends and social trends and, you know, all of it. But in particular, trying to help the church wake up to the issues and challenges for young people and the new digital environment that we're trying to minister in. You know, lives don't change in terms of human nature doesn't change, God's nature doesn't change, but the tools, technologies, cultural environment in which we change, in which we minister does change. And that's what really fires me up, is to try to help prepare Christian leaders for that change, particularly related to generational gaps.
Well, very excited. In a few minutes, we'll introduce them to have Jessica Beeler and Kellen Moore here, but you've got some data that we've been collecting. This is part of the city's data, is that right? We've been drilling down on a number of cities in America, trying to figure out what's really going on at the local level through Barna Cities, which you can check out at barnacities.com. What have we got this week to look at, David?
Yeah, the cities initiative is a fun one, and we've also done some, you know, both sort of city-based data, and we're touring that in, you know, both digitally and in person in Dallas, Fort Worth, in Columbus, Ohio, in Kansas City, and then also in South Florida. But we've also got a national study where we can look at the perspectives of all U.S. adults in comparison to those cities. And so just a few things from the national norms that we're learning is that parents are coming out of the pandemic pretty shaken up in terms of some of the ways that they're thinking about and prioritizing the raising of their children. Number one, they're concerned about the long-term effect of the pandemic on their kids, both sort of the mental health and sort of just all the ways in which, you know, the parents who've had to educate their kids at home, and then, you know, God bless the teachers of the U.S. who've had to educate, you know, especially younger children, but all ages of children across digital technologies. But 85% of parents said they're concerned about the long-term impact of the pandemic on their kids. That's number one. Number two, they're concerned about the meaningful relationships that their children have, both with other children, 85% are very concerned, and with other adults, 85% are very concerned. So far we're hitting 85% on all these things. So it's, you know, almost 9 out of 10 parents are concerned about that. And then finally, which is surprising, it's 87% of parents, practicing Christian parents, and they're very concerned about their children's spiritual development. And so, just as adults have faced major change to their faith practices and rhythms with the pandemic, kids have also felt the impact of this in so many ways, and parents have as well. And so what does it look like for churches to continue to provide resources for kids, for meaningful relationships and development for parents? You know, how do we actually do this both and of digital and physical ministry as there's sort of some end in sight to the pandemic? And, you know, what's the role of family? So some of those things we're going to be diving into today, but you can see how the pandemic is sort of changing the psychology of parents and their level of involvement and sort of ramping up their concerns about how this is all going to go for their own children.
I'll throw in a question from the non-researcher half of the host of this show, but you and I have crunched a lot of numbers over the last year and a bit on Church Pulse Weekly. It's not typical to get like 85, 87%. Is that statistically, like it's almost like almost every parent is nervous about their kids. We're almost at that level.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and we're reporting on in those 80 plus percent numbers, the very and somewhat concerned. There's kind of a combined aggregate total, but it's rare to see those kinds of consistently high numbers. You know, when you have 85% three times in a row, 87% for four or five different questions, it's pretty unique. And it tells us that, you know, people's pressure is really amped up. Their anxiety is turned up to 11, as the old joke goes. And you know, there's this real sense of as people are trying to figure out like what's next for you know, raising kids. And it was hard before, it's even harder now. And I think there's again some relief for people in the air as they're recognizing that, you know, the fall is not going to be quite as digital as it was last year. And you know, we've all gone through such a hellacious season here with COVID. But yeah, I think everyone's really, really concerned. And how can churches and Christian leaders come in to be people of peace as we serve the Prince of Peace to a very anxious generation of parents and an anxious generation of children and teens?
Well, and you're doing ministry in the midst of it, which is why we do this show. So really thrilled to have Jessica Buehler and Kellen Moore with us. Jessica has been leading children's ministry for 19 years, six of which were spent at Elevation Church. She's overseen the launch of 20 locations, is a specialist in kid multi-site. She currently serves as the Family Ministry Services Division of Genera. She oversees it. And that's an organization dedicated to helping churches see their mission accomplished. And Kellen Moore is a nationwide conference, camp, and tour speaker and host. He is the Next Gen pastor at Our City Church, located in Southern California. He's pastored in full-time in children's ministry now for over a decade and partners with Orange, as does Jessica, creating content for kids ministry and leaders all over the country and the world. Kellen and Jessica, welcome. We're so glad to have you. And friends, too. It's just really good to hang out.
For sure. Thanks for having us. It's going
to
be fun.
Yeah. Hi. Good to see you guys.
Yeah. One of we do this every time we're together speaking on the road, right? How tall are you, Kellen, without even with hair when you got the fro going?
With the hair, I'm about 6'11". If you took the hair off, I'm probably about 6'6.5".
Okay, there you go. But that's pretty impressive. It really is. It makes the best photo op, David. So if you're ever on the road with Kellen, you got to get a photo op. My favorite is you and John Acuff, because it just shows how tall he is, right?
He always cuts my head off. He thinks it's funny to take a picture and then have his 5 foot.
Doesn't even fit in the
five self. Yeah,
doesn't even fit in the camera. Anyway, I don't think that's why we got together. We do have, it's good to laugh because you look at the news and it's like, it's not super encouraging. Man, Jess, you're a mom too. Like parents are anxious. Can we start with you? Any response to the data that David shared?
Gosh, yeah. When you were talking about like 80 to 85% of parents are nervous or more, you know, like I feel like that every parent, I mean, you know, there's always an exception to any rule, but I feel like every parent has some concerns coming out of this pandemic. I mean, one of my greatest concerns right now is I'm pretty sure that my kids are behind educationally. So what does that mean for them for college? What does that mean for them for scholarships? What does that mean for them? You know, is it going to be a thing where they say, oh, those were the kids of the pandemic? Like, is that going to be a thing? And that's just my concern. But I mean, there are tons of other concerns I'm seeing in the trenches of ministry too. I mean, we're seeing kids with separation anxiety in elementary school, and that's not typically the time. Most of the time you see that in preschool age, but we're seeing it in elementary school now in ministries across the country. So yeah, I think 85% or higher. I think every parent coming out of this pandemic is concerned about the mental, spiritual, physical growth and development of their child.
Hmm. Kellen, any thoughts from your perspective?
Yeah, not being a parent yet, working with kids and families over the course of this pandemic, one situation that I've heard a lot from parents is a lot of second guessing on their parenting, because it went from I'm a parent and I send my kids to school and we trust the teachers take care of. And then it shifted to I'm not a teacher, but I'm also a mom, but I also have to go to my 9-to-5 job. And so the juggling, a lot of questioning of parents, if they're doing the right job spiritually, leading their kids, doing the right job educationally, making the right decisions. And are they, you know, too protective? Are they not hovering over enough? Are they making sure the Zoom calls went through? Are they following up on homework? So a lot of parents I've noticed, I can only assume in this 85% feel like they've questioned their parenting over the last year and a half, which is a bit different than what it was prior. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about what's changed over the last 15 months, particularly in kids ministry, because you're both children's ministry specialists. So I think it's an important conversation for senior pastors to remember, as I've thought about many times as senior pastor. I haven't done your job, but 70% of the people that I speak to on a Sunday morning, typically over the years, would be parents with children at home. And so you can think, well, that's kids ministry. But if you're a senior pastor, you're like, no, you're all in this together. So mm-hmm. what do we all need to know? Kids ministry leaders, senior leaders, board members, what do we need to know about what's changed in kids ministry over the last 15, 16 months?
I would just say that for a very, very long time, we relied on the weekend experience for our personal touch, which was our crutch. And so we would see them, we would catch up, hey, how's the baseball game go? How's school going? How's your mom? You know, that kind of thing. And that was really taken away from us. And we had to all go digital. And we had to convince people that digital was still church. That this really was still coming together as a body of believers. And this is still good and healthy for your child and for your student. And, you know, now as we are hopefully beginning to off-ramp for COVID, I know we've still got a while to go in certain places of the country and the world. But as we are off-ramping, you know, we did a really good job of convincing them. And so now we have to convince them that being in person is actually better. And I think that's going to be a challenge. And I also think that the challenge for us, both in COVID and after, you know, post-COVID, I think is going to be, are we going to reach out? Are we actually going to make it personal outside of the weekend? And I think the most successful ministries, the most successful churches are going to be the ones who minister not on Sunday morning. I think those are going to be the most successful people.
Kellen, what's your take? What's changed?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything Jessica said, especially the gathering, the large group experience. You go from, you know, I'm a kids pastor, I'm a next gen pastor, so prepping for Sunday was taken away. And I'm like, how do I reach these kids? How do I reach this 7-year-old who's no longer sitting in front of me, you know, listening to the Bible story? But one thing that I do know that has changed drastically is the church's need for resourcing parents. Before it's like, hey, do you have a book that we can talk about sex? I want to talk to my kids about that. Do you have a resource there? Or my kid is, you know, now interested in this subject of church. Can you lead me towards a spiritual thing? But a lot of resourcing that I was asked was, I think my kid's depressed. My kid keeps saying he's anxious, which at 7 years old, I didn't know what the word anxious meant when I was seven. And now these kids can give a definition and description of how they feel and, you know, the signs and all that. And so I think one big thing is churches, especially our church, needed to make resourcing for parents on a health, mental health, a physical health, relationship health, a spiritual health. So all the things you guys had brought up earlier in the podcast, parents were looking for resourcing from that. So I know that's going to be a drastic change in the church.
Yeah. And I want to add something to Kellen that Kellen said earlier about how parents are, you know, second guessing themselves. There is such a lot of room right there for resources that reaffirm parents that are encouraging and uplifting and telling them they're doing a great job. And yeah, maybe some insight and advice into some simple things. But there is so much room there for just resourcing that says, hey, you're doing a great job.
Yeah, Jessica, I want to pick up on something you said. You know, we convinced them that digital worked and we got everybody over there. And now we're trying to convince them that in-person is better, but it's challenging. What's challenging about that?
Yeah, because for a year, they've made other things their priority, right? I mean, and in many instances, they spent more time with their kids. Like on Sunday mornings when you didn't go to church, you just went to the backyard and played frisbee. And how healthy is that to actually have a meaningful conversation with your child? And so I think many of them actually found healthy things to do in this time. Many of them probably didn't, and they just had other priorities. But I do think that as a family, we were forced to kind of spend time together and learn more about each other. And they liked it. And so now, like, giving up that time to go to the church, you know, may feel like a sacrifice. And so we have to essentially, you know, find ways to not only make it attractive to them, but also to feel that same need that they were finding during the pandemic when they were just spending time at home. So it may look like finding opportunities for shared experiences, something that we probably wouldn't have considered in the past, but maybe that's something that we look at. But what we have to understand is that parents prioritized other things, and those priorities still remain. And so now, how can we help them with new priorities? How can we continue to help them grow themselves spiritually, but also their child?
You know, that's an interesting thought, because before it was travel sports, it was vacations, it was sleepovers, it was stuff like that that would get in the way. And if I'm correct, what I hear you saying, and this is something I've written about in the adult world as well, it's more a question of, no, we actually really like our family ritual now because we haven't had the option. We're really enjoying being together, whether that's making breakfast together, throwing a Frisbee, going for a walk, you know, and then church becomes 45 minutes, not 2 hours, 3 hours, 5 hours. Is that what you're talking about? Like, this is now families have discovered a Sunday rhythm that doesn't necessarily include in-person gathering?
Yes, absolutely. And if it does, it really needs to play to the rhythm of their life. So just like you said, is it 60 minutes or 90 minutes, or is it 40 minutes? And is there something where they can have breakfast with their child in the foyer, and then they're only separated for 30, 35 minutes, and then they come back together? I'm not saying that's what your church needs to go to, but you should at least, at minimum, be having these conversations about what are the new priorities? How can we play to the rhythm of their lives? How can we still allow them to come together and form these healthy relationships as a family, feel like a tight-knit unit?
Yeah, Kellen, you got a take on that? I'm curious, because this just complicates the situation if it's drawing people in the building, right?
No, it does. As Jess was speaking, one thing that came to mind was the kids that were born during the beginning of the pandemic or near the beginning, where their whole year has been mom, dad, siblings. Some of those kids may not have the social skills. And I think Jess brought up earlier with anxiety, like separation anxiety. And I just realized I had a leadership meeting a day before we recorded this. And two of my leaders came in with 3-month-olds. And my first thought was, oh, wow, I'm going to have kids in this ministry that have not experienced large group gatherings before. And so it's figuring that out. And so I do think there is a rhythm with new parents and with parents that have, like you guys said, set a rhythm that will the church fit inside their rhythmic schedule, which I don't think for California, a lot of stuff has been shut down. So I don't think a lot of people will be on that fringe of, I don't want to go. We have people, you know, chomping at the bit to get back in church right now. But I think that is a great position to bring up and to think about and be aware of with families in your church.
Kellen, something you mentioned was the mental health and, you know, sort of like the awareness that people have, younger people, especially of mental health issues and sort of anxiety, all that. I actually think that's on balance a really positive trend that young people are attuned to issues of the inner life and of their mental health and awareness. Obviously, anything can become too one-sided or, you know, become fixated on something. You know, I heard said recently, emotions should be acknowledged, but they shouldn't be worshipped. I thought that's such a great line. Like we should be in tune with our emotions, but we shouldn't sort of live always out of our emotions and worship them. What are you guys learning, seeing, trying when it comes to trying to help engage this issue of mental health, both with parents and with young people as well?
Yeah, I would just say that if your church isn't offering not just resources, but I mean, there should be someone either on your staff or maybe contracted by your staff that parents can go to. Because if you haven't already got a dozen calls, you're going to, or more. I mean, like every single week we are hearing, my child's struggling with anxiety, my child is struggling with depression. My own child who is 13 years old and who is like the most independent child ever, very successful in school. I mean, we're actually changing her school this year because she didn't want to go back to her previous school. And it's really because of anxiety. She was anxious about some things that she had faced last year during the pandemic. we found another reason for it. This is a major life change that we are making because my child was experiencing some low anxiety. So, I mean, every parent out there, I feel like this is on their radar and they're concerned about it. They're watching for it. And if their child is expressing it or not, they are concerned about it. So you need to have somebody on contract with your church that can help you navigate, because you probably, as a ministry leader, probably know just enough to get yourself in trouble. And so we really need to invite the experts to help us. And I will tell you that if you help a family in crisis, you will be able to not only impact them right now, but they'll listen for months, years, generations to come. They'll tune in, they'll engage better with your ministry because you were there with them in the crisis.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think ministry leaders out there need to kind of reevaluate, I think, their volunteer trainings and their leadership trainings to, like, kind of what Jess was saying, just basic information, because we're going to have a lot of kids, David, coming into our ministries that are going to be self-aware, that are going to know that they had those conversations with mom and dad about anxiety and depression, and our leaders can't be caught off guard, because we have some leaders that are parents and they've walked through this. We have other leaders that are, you know, young adults that are willing to serve, and we really need to train our church to identify when a kid starts talking about it, how to listen, how to redirect, and follow up with parents. So if a parent comes to pick up little Johnny, we're able to say, hey, Johnny had a great conversation today. He talked to me about, you know, things that scared him at school and how transit. And so I think our volunteer teams really need to have basic training to begin to hear these conversations go from home to church.
It's good.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that about kids who have never really socialized. One of our friends has three kids, 5 and under. And one has spent their entire life in a pandemic lockdown, another half his life. And then the third has never been to school yet, you know, because they didn't put him in digital learning. So he'll start kindergarten, not really having socialized. And that's just a very different reality. If it's a couple of months, it's a blip, right? But year and a half into this, depending on where you are, what state, what country, what part of the world you're in, this is very life forming for a lot of people. So we're talking about digital versus in-person. Kellen, I want to pitch this to you, and Jess, feel free to weigh in after, but you produced video content for years, long before the pandemic. I mean, that's what you did, right? You're a face to tens of thousands of kids across America. What have you learned about how to engage kids effectively over video? And then I would also ask, what are the limits of video?
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, David, that this new generation is Gen Alpha is what they're...
The youngest generation now, a researcher in Australia is calling them Gen Alpha, depending on... Barna hasn't come up with a phrase, whether we'll stay consistent with that, but Gen Z is... They're about 23 and under, and you know, if you use a sort of standard 18 years, again, some of that sort of, there's some questions around whether that should actually be shorter now, so that a generation is fewer than 18 years, just because the speed of change. But anyway, generational theory is so fascinating. I mean, everyone sort of just makes it up on some basis. But yeah, Gen Z, Gen Alpha would be sort of what's next. I think some good friends, Mark McCrindle and Ashley Fell in Australia, are calling him Gen Alpha.
Okay, fantastic. Well, that age group, I had to do a little bit of research because I didn't want to be unprepared coming here. But I do know, and just sitting, you know, with kids, this generation screens. They're going to know screens, every facet from television to phone to computer to their watches, everything are screens. And so doing videos, I think, have a great impact because that is the way they learn. That's what they, you know, they watch cartoons, they watch programming on YouTube. Good night, YouTube. If I have to hear about YouTube one more time for my kids, they love YouTube. But they learn a lot, everything from online. And so I think video practices, having videos up there, are phenomenal because I believe naturally that's where that younger generation learns is from video. So pro, I think we're going with, you know, the flow of that generation being used to it and can learn from it. And I love video for smaller churches. And this is the big reason, smaller churches that may not have a ton of diversity at their church. So I'm African American. You guys can see it, and if you're listening, I'm Black. And putting me on a video that has two white males as the lead, and then they throw to the Bible story with this Black, you know, teacher who has this afro. There are a lot of kids in churches that are predominantly white. but you'll have those sprinkle of other ethnicities and races. And so I think video, especially if you find the right videos and the right programming, can give identity to the kids watching. I've gotten numerous Facebook messages and Instagram messages of, Kellen, we love the so-and-so show. My kid wants to grow his hair out just like you because he loves how you teach the Bible. Or my kid looks just like you and he gets excited every time you pop on the screen. And so for me, that makes me just biggest smile because I grew up in a mostly white church. And so when I hear those stories, I'm like, oh, that's so exciting. That's so exhilarating that these kids get to see themselves in, you know, in who I am teaching the Bible. And so I think there are great, great aspects to having video. But I think where the con comes in is when a church relies on it too much and doesn't get to the relational part afterwards. Carrie, at many conferences, people will come up and say, Kellen, we love your stuff. Our kids love you. Can we take a picture or can you do a video? Which I'm totally fine to do. I'll do it because, you know, show your kids. But what I always tell them afterwards is, I'm glad you love the content. You're the real hero. Take this picture and go get like clout with these kids because you're the one that's going to be investing in their lives. I appreciate you guys using the content, but you're the ones that need to follow up with the stories we teach and follow up with the parents that I'll never meet. So I think video has a great purpose, but if you're not using it with strategy and intention, it can become a crutch.
I think that's such a really terrific point, Kellen, and that, you know, screens are such a discipling tool today. They're sort of an anti-discipler, but they're also a discipling tool. And we've talked about this on the podcast before, but I call it the gospel according to YouTube or the gospel according to TikTok. Google has become the sex educator, the principal sort of source of, like, you know, what's really real in the world. And when you're talking about, like, you know, bringing, let's say, ethnic diversity to a local church by just playing a video, I mean, it's not the same as the true diversity of having, you know, sort of leaders of color in your church, but it's at least a step in the right direction. And I actually think that one of the most effective ways we can minister to young people today is that our churches could become almost like curators of great digital content. So, hey, we want to introduce you to, you know, these channels of content or these accounts to be following or these places to be, you know, viewing. And I've thought about this a lot when it comes to vocation and career counseling. Like, you know, a local church isn't going to have, many local churches aren't going to have all the different vocations represented, but they may be able to help young people actually figure out, hey, this is a person who's an architect or a designer or, you know, who's doing some work in the world, and young people's imaginations for how, as a Christian, they could be following Christ in their future vocations. Even young people, right? Like, even just eight years old, they're like, hey, I want to be a policeman or a fire person or, you know, whatever. And I think there's ways for us to use the diversity of voices through screens that helps to introduce people to the breadth of, you know, sort of what Christianity aspires to do in the world and real people doing that in the world. So anyway, thanks for sharing that. That was an idea that was sparking for me.
Jessica, any take on digital ministry versus in-person?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the great things that happened kind of during the pandemic was that we, you know, like, we didn't focus so much on the flash and the high production. It was more just like, it could be lo-fi, it could be shot in your room, as long as it was relevant and funny and entertaining, kids were open to watch it. So I think for us as ministry leaders, just like David was saying, this is a tool, and the tool just got a lot easier to use because you don't have to be the best to be able to use it. You just have to be relevant and you just have to know what kids like. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity here. I mean, TikTok is like, I mean, every kid who is like 15 and under, actually probably 18 and under, that's their obsession. Now it's being used by influencers and businesses. I mean, it's insane the level of influence it's having. And these are very, very short, very lo-fi productions. Lots of times the mistakes themselves end up making it on there and everybody laughs. And that's why they end up, you know, going viral or whatever it may be. So this is a great tool that we have. But just kind of like what Kellen was saying, which is so very interesting about the conversations afterwards, I probably get the phrase in my house, mom, check this out, about a dozen times a day. And it's about a video. It's a TikTok or it's some kind of meme or it's something. But they say, mom, check this out. They'll flip it around and show it to me. And then they start laughing. And isn't that hilarious? And then we talk for the next 2 minutes about the 15-second video that we just watched. So it is this incredible tool but the conversation is key. So like, yes, use the tool. It just got a lot easier to use. But make sure that you're not leaving out the communication afterwards, because that's where the discipleship happens.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, Jess, you consult churches all over the country as part of your work with Generis. What are you seeing? What are some emerging trends? What's really starting to work? What are some of the best churches doing that you're seeing, large and small?
Yeah, so, you know, it's crazy. I think that that Barna has probably played into this right now, but really during a season where it felt like we couldn't do much when our hands were tied, lots of ministry leaders around the country started looking at analytics the way they never have in the past before. They started looking at numbers, because numbers do tell a story. There's a narrative there, and it will help you to gauge engagement and to gauge frequency. And so even though in a lot of ways we've had this information, if you just check your database for the last decade, a lot of us have had this information, we've actually, you know, with big data and some other things, we've actually been able to use it. So I would just say the most successful churches right now are not ignoring their numbers. They're not ignoring their databases. They're not ignoring the analytics. And they're checking in to make sure that that their first-time guest experience, which people who have kids, that they're coming back. Are they coming back at a rate of 5%? Are they coming back at a rate of 60%? That's going to tell you how effective that your first-time guest experience is with families, with kids and students. You know, frequency of attendance. Are they coming one time every 6 weeks, or are they coming three times? I was talking to a church the other day that they're averaging 2.4 times per month, and I was blown away. I was like, wait, the families in your church are coming 2.4 times? That's almost all the time. Like, that's incredible. And you should know that, because that's going to help you with engagement. So I think it's not that it's some mystery. It's just that when we didn't have anything else to look at, because people weren't coming in our doors and we didn't have 15 different ministries going on this past weekend, what did we look at? We looked at our analytics. We looked at people who were engaging, and we started to use those analytics to actually become more effective. So I think the most effective ministries are going to be the ones who are digging into their databases and they're finding the stories there, and they're allowing themselves to use those numbers to better impact families, to better engage.
Just a shout out to numbers, man, because my love language.
Oh, yeah, totally. And you know what? I wonder, this is just an editorial comment, but if you don't like the numbers, it's easy to ignore them. It's easy if they're trending down a little bit, if they're not telling you the story you want, it's easier just kind of go, well, you know, we had that one new person last week, and you start swapping real data for anecdotes and for stories. And I'm a big believer in stories, but stories do not in and of themselves reverse a trend. Hey, Kellen, I know you're super focused on a local church because you work at a local church, right, in Southern California, but are you among your peers starting to see other trends or seeing something in your own ministry that you're chasing down when it comes to more effective kids ministry?
Yeah, for us, you know, like I said, we're trying to move back into in-person, which I can't believe is now an expression. We're always going to say in-person versus digital. We're going to be moving in-person, but a few things that I've seen from my friends in other states that have been open for a while is one thing they keep telling me is, Kellen, you got to keep digital. You got to keep digital. You got to keep digital. Moving forward, if your church has not been a digital church, because it was all in person, maybe at a website or an Instagram that they would upload, they're like, you can't shy away from doing digital. If people were accustomed to watching a pastor from the comfort of their home because of how they felt about the pandemic, you got to keep it going, because they give and they may not show up. It may take a little bit more time. And so one pastor of mine told me, digital is going nowhere. It's absolutely going nowhere. It needs to be a part of your church online to some facet. So that's kind of where we're at as a, you know, a local church. We just got our website bumping. It looks good. It's going. But if we fail to upload a video of the sermon from Sunday, our pastor will get a text saying, hey, I'm living out in Oregon. Why can't we watch your message this Sunday? So, you know, being digital, the reach was a bit bigger for a lot more local churches. And I think churches should capitalize on that.
So I would just want to say that I think that Kellen definitely is talking, like I've been saying this the whole time, like you can't just walk away from it. I understand that post-COVID, there's going to be this, okay, let's focus on the people in front of me, but we can't just walk away from it. I am saying this is super practical. I love to dig down into like practical details of things. What are the things that I am seeing that's kind of merging both like the in-person and the digital? Is a strategy of texting an update, a one-week mm-hmm. update to parents and students, where the ministry leader or the small group leader is just like, hey, parents, want to let you know this is what we're doing this week. This is what we learned this week. Here's two questions that you can ask your kid. And oh, by the way, the fair is in town. So make sure that you check that out with your kid, whatever it may be. But it kind of like is merging it. And so it's reinforcing, hey, we want you to be with us in person. Kind of this whole thing, my husband says it all the time, like we want them to feel like they missed out without feeling left out. And so like it's kind of this thing of we want you to come back in person. We feel like there's value there. But in the meantime, if you weren't with us, or even if you were, here's a digital connection for you. And so I think this is just one very, very practical thing. It can literally, this would be a 10-minute addition to your weekly calendar where you literally get in front of your phone, you shoot a lo-fi video, and then you text it out to your parents to keep them connected.
Hmm. Some really practical ideas here. I want to switch back a little bit closer to where we started, talking about the next generation. What are the qualities, good, bad, and otherwise, like not bad, but like challenging qualities and the affirming qualities that you see in Gen Z, and if we call them that, Generation Alpha, basically in the kids and students of today? So what's encouraging you? What's worrying you? What are the trends, and what is this next generation like?
I have three Gen Zers. Well, four. One is actually in the Navy who moved out, but I have three living in my house right now, Gen Zers. So this is definitely where most of my days are spent, is helping them navigate their life. I would just say that they are more overwhelmed than any generation before them. There is, all these social issues that are so very important to them, sexism, racism, all of the political climate right now, they're so more involved than I ever was at their age. Like that is part of it. They have a whole social media identity that they're trying to manage. There's so much pressure to achieve. They were raised in an area where all these, or in this time when all these startups were getting going, like huge startups like Uber and things like that. And so they also have this entrepreneurial spirit about them, and like, I can achieve anything. But at the same time, you couple that with everything else, and they are feeling very, very overwhelmed. Like, I want to accomplish something. I need to accomplish something. But I also have a million other, things that I have to manage. So I think that we have to be aware right now that if we're adding one more thing onto Generation Z's plate, like, we're not helping them. If we're helping them identify solutions to be able to manage their life, or identify ways to help them, gain better perspective, those are things that can help. But when we're like, oh, you also have to do this, they're going to, turn a blind eye to anything that we have to say. And they don't want it to, discuss it or talk about it, because the pressure is so very real right now. I think also just it's incredible to me. My husband and I wanted to build a home that all of our kids' friends would always come to. And there is never a weekend that goes by that we don't have 5, 10, 15. This past weekend, I think at one point we had 19 teenagers in our house. And there's never a weekend that doesn't happen at my house. But one of the things that that I am seeing is that there is less religious identity among this generation than ever before. They don't know what they believe. And in many instances, they don't know what they don't know. And so I think we just have to take that into account when we're ministering to them, because religion and faith hasn't even been a topic in their house. And so how can we then just be like, oh, hey, you need to know Jesus. Who is Jesus? And like, they may have heard that name before, but like, they don't know what a meaningful relationship with Christ looks like. So I think there are lots of very intriguing aspects of Gen Z. The other thing that just catches me is, I think about it all the time, specifically with my daughter, who is the youngest of my crew and the youngest Gen Z that I have. She, like, when we talk about times without technology, that feels like a myth. Like how my grandparents would talk about an outhouse, but I never actually saw one. I'm like, okay, I don't even remember, like that kind of thing. Life without technology, like before when you had a phone on a cord, my daughter's like, what's that? And I think it's just really important for us to understand that this generation, Gen Z, is a generation that never had to live without technology and, without instant gratification and things at their fingertips. They're fascinating. I mean, I know that I have three of them in my house and four total that I've had the opportunity to raise, but it's a fascinating generation for sure.
Kellen, what are you seeing in the next gen?
Yeah, you were describing my youth ministry. Everything you were saying, Jess, I'm like, yep, that's my youth ministry. Yeah. One big thing that I am seeing that I think is great is the fact that we have, so I'm a millennial, I'm 34, and I have a lot of friends who have kiddos that are in my ministry, which is so weird, but I love every second of it. One thing I do notice is that millennial parents and a little bit older are spending a lot of time with their kids. I know that's something that it's really fun to watch where, you know, you go on Instagram or whatever, and you'll see parents doing TikToks with their kids and all these things to be engaged. And I think that's super encouraging. I actually love that that generation has that connection for the most part with their parents. But what Jess was saying, I think one thing that a lot of these Gen Z kids need is mentorship, because they have everything at their grasp. They have knowledge, like you said, David, Google. They can Google whatever the Sam Hill they want and come to a conclusion. And like Jess said, a lot of it doesn't land on their faith and religion. It lands on everything else. And so I think one great, is it a rudder that steers? That they need is a mentor, a person figure, a volunteer, someone who's serving in the next gen ministry to help guide all of their curiosities. I don't think it's a bad thing that they're curious. Actually, I love this generation because they're smart. They want to learn. They want to get information. They just need someone steering the information that they're learning. So pro, you can get a next gen kid in your serve teams and they'll learn. Hey, you want to be in tech? Yeah. Have you ever done it? No, but give me a week and I'll research how to use a soundboard and I'll be back next week and but they just need that person to really guide and steer. So I think their perk is they have the knowledge. I think we as a church just need to stand and be alongside them to help steer where all that knowledge is taking them.
So good.
I'd love to know as we wrap up, what is one opportunity you see for every church leader? If you were consulting me, you're like, Carrie, you got to pay attention to this. What is this in your mind? We'll start with you, Kellen. What would you encourage leaders to watch?
I would say to really watch, actually not even really watch, but more so keep their ear to what's being said. What's being said, not from other leaders, but what's being said based off whatever next generation area that they're working in. So you, Carrie, if you're, you know, you as senior pastor and I'm looking at you, I'd be like, hey, I know that you're looking at the grand scope and you're looking at the numbers and you're looking at the figures and you have so much on your plate. But I would say from your perspective of leadership, if your kids pastor or youth pastor comes up to you and lets you know of a felt need, my prayer is that you would listen to it and not dismiss it as, oh, just go take care of the next gen, whatever you need, but rather listen to what's happening, because I think that listening will actually influence the rest of the church if you know what's happening in your kids. And so for any person working in next gen, listen to your dang kids, listen to your dang students. I think sometimes we as adults think we know more because we're older, and that is not the fact. We just have a little bit more experience in life than they do, but they're telling you what is happening right now. And if a kid tells you they're anxious, you can do the adult thing and say, no, it's fine. Or you can sit and say, well, why do you feel anxious? I think we need to do a little bit more listening, especially in this time. Not saying church hasn't, just to answer your question, I think instead of watching, I think we really need to open our ears and listen to what's being said and earnestly take in what people are saying.
That's good. Jess, what would you say?
Yeah, I would just say with kids and students, this generation and beyond, I don't think that church has to be defined or should be defined within the walls of a building on one or two days of the week. I think really for kids and students, church is somebody that I trust showing up to my baseball game and cheering me on throughout the week. I think it's meeting me at McDonald's before I go to high school and just hanging with me. I think it is when I'm really nervous about a test, just calling somebody and them taking the time to walk me through it. I think that's what church is. And I think that's the way that the next generation is defining church. And so I think for ministry leaders, for senior pastors, for executive leaders, whoever is listening to this podcast, I think if you have confined your children's ministry and your student ministry to what happens on the weekend or what happens on your website, either way, whether it's digital or whether it's online, if you confined it to that, then you really are boxing in the Holy Spirit, because I feel like this generation, more than any other generation, church is not going to look or feel the same as it has ever before. And I think the pandemic just magnified that, because right now they need connection more than they need anything else. And so I think if we really truly want to minister, then we have to figure out how to do church on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, not just on Sunday. I think that's going to have the greatest impact. I think ultimately that will grow our church. But growing our church does not mean that our numbers go up always on Sunday morning. It may mean that we're having a greater impact with students on Friday night at the football game. Does that still count? Of course it counts. It just looks different than it has in the past.
Hmm. Man, that's so good and so helpful. Thank you. David, I'll give you the final word. Any thoughts as we wrap up today?
No, thanks to you guys for being a part of the podcast. And I think it's been so helpful for listeners. It's been helpful for me as I'm just sitting here with my own kids. They're 22, 20, and almost 17. And just thinking about all the world they're living in. And Kellen, I really appreciated your perspective about listening. I mean, I've been listening to younger generations now through our social research for a better part of 15 years, 25 years I've been here at Barna, but really focusing on next generation dynamics. And, you know, even for people that are sort of further away from their faith and their physical presence in the building or in the program looks, right? So I even think there's some emphasis for us in recognizing that people, their heart might be further away from the church. And so even paying more close attention to what people are saying about how they're experiencing Jesus and, you know, they're living out their faith and just paying attention to clues that even if they do walk away from faith, we're still going to be there for them. And, you know, they're not going to like destroy our relational friendship with them. So anyway, I think it's been a wonderful conversation with you both. Thank you so much for joining us. And I hope it helps listeners a lot.
Well, illuminating and challenging. Jessica Beeler, thanks so much. Kellen Moore, thanks for being with us. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, share it with a friend, and let us know. You can hit me up on Instagram or the Barna Group as well. So grateful for you. We are enjoying, and I know it's challenging, but drilling down on Next Gen Ministry. And we'll continue that next week on Church Pulse Weekly. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to the Church Pulse Weekly podcast. Join us next week for more insights on navigating constant change in an era of disruption and how to stay connected to the people in your church.